And we are back with the Gulf Coast Growth Show Virtual Edition. We are here with Stuart Kaye from Kelsey Siebold across the Southeast region. And again, Stuart, welcome to the show. Glad to have you today.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
To our audience, again, taking a pivot, I think this is going to be the agenda for the next few weeks. We're going to do our very best to try to produce some great content, short and sweet, to the point, and get valuable information out to you from those that are in the trenches and those that are making an impact in our region. So with that being said, Kelsey Siebold, you're probably familiar with the name. I will have Stuart give us a kind of a brief update as to who they are and then the work that they've been doing. But the agenda for the show is very simple. What's the work that's been being done, right? We see it, we hear it, but we're going to get to hear from somebody that can speak and articulate to what's really going on behind the scenes in the medical system inside of Kelsey Siebold. We're going to learn quite a bit about the shift that's happening in medicine and the industry, the things that are happening, the direction that they're having to go, the pivots that are being made. And then really, as we start to see some of this great news that's being released around kind of starting to get life back, how do we then take what this looks like for us, and then what does the future look like as we move, you know, both short-term, long-term? So Stuart has a great amount of information to share with us today. With that, sir, I'm going to turn it over to you, have you start with giving us a little quick backdrop of what's been going on behind the scenes. Really, we know it's in front of the scenes. It's right in front of our face. But tell us what's happening and the work that's been going on with Kelsey Siebold in the last, you know, 60 days.
Well, thank you, Jason, for that introduction. And just a little bit about Kelsey Siebold first. I think you alluded to this. You know, we are a large multi-specialty group practice in Houston, 450 physicians strong, over 3,000 employees. We have a five-star Medicare Advantage plan, the only one in Houston. There are only two in state. And we're actually the nation's first accredited accountable care organization. So we've been busy in healthcare. We've been in this business since 1949, and we love what we do. You know, you ask about, I've never been labeled short and sweet, but I'll try to keep it short and sweet for you, okay? You know, there is a lot that's been going on in the last, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks. You know, I think we were all kind of wondering, with the information that was coming out of Asia, what was actually happening. And I wish we had all had a crystal ball back then, but, you know, we didn't. But I think as the numbers began to come in, as we began to see more patients show up positive in Washington and California and New York, we all started taking a little bit, you know, closer note, you know, watching, listening, learning, trying to find out what's happening and using the information that we have, the real information, to make our decisions. You know, but I think it's like any other hurricane or pandemic in this case, you know, you plan for the worst and hope for the best. And so I think we were engaged early on in this process and trying to determine what was going to happen in Texas. Certainly this Gulf Coast region, you know, this is a huge reason for GDP. I think it's 25% of the state of Texas in this Gulf Coast region. So, you know, we were certainly trying to figure out what was happening and what was going to happen. So, you know, one of our main goals, to be honest with you, when we first went down this path was to make sure that we were keeping as many patients as we possibly could out of the emergency rooms and the hospitals. You may remember that there was a lot of concern that our hospitals would fill up, that our emergency rooms would be clogged up. There would not be enough, you know, equipment, ventilators to handle all of these patients. So we put it upon ourselves to do everything that we could to make sure that we didn't end up sending patients to the emergency room in the hospital. We wanted to take care of them as much as we possibly could, you know. But we had an order at one point to cancel all elective procedures, and that was a good order. You know, that was designed to certainly free up our hospital beds, free up the ICUs, free up the equipment, but also free up the personal protective equipment as well, and also socially distance in some ways, and to help, you know, mitigate this pandemic that we're having. But, you know, all in all, we still have patients. You know, cancer doesn't take a holiday. Women still have babies. I mean, diabetes still needs to be managed. People still break bones. And so we still need to see those patients, and we needed to find ways to see them better in that, making sure that they were isolated or not subject to, you know, the epidemic and the flu that we were currently experiencing. So, you know, we did a lot to make sure that we changed our processes to make sure that we were keeping our patients safe. But, you know, we also need to keep our providers and staff safe. And so we did a lot of policy changes, a lot of policy implementation to make sure that our providers and staff were safe. And one of the first things we did too was develop what we call a COVID clinic. One of the things that we wanted to do was, how do we take care of these patients and make sure that everybody's safe? So we really, at that point in time, leveraged our virtual health platform. And our COVID clinic is run by Don Iaga, one of our internists and also our chief of innovation. And so he had a team of physicians and nurses that would see virtually through video or through phone or e-visits every upper respiratory patient that we possibly could. The idea was to see them outside of the clinic so that everybody else in the clinic, were segregated. And that worked out very, very well. Another thing that we did was to create a first responders hotline. And that was to make sure that we were taking care of the firemen and the policemen, the healthcare workers, because, you can't be a first responder if you can't get to work because you're sick. So we did a lot of work with that, working with the various municipalities to making sure that we were reaching out to them and coordinating that care as much as we possibly could and answering all of their questions. But the virtual medicine piece was the big, the big vehicle that we used through this entire process. They say the necessity is the mother of invention, but we saw the necessity of virtual medicine many, many years ago. And so we built the platform through Epic, and it's been a lifesaver for us. Again, it's allowed us to see many patients by video, phone, or through email. A number of different ways. And so we've really leveraged that platform, and it's served us very well. I would say another one of the key focal points that we had was managing our PPE. And that became, I can touch more on that later, but we've heard about the national shortages. Ships were turned back from China. A lot of the PPE was actually diverted up to New York when they were in a crisis situation. So a lot of us down here in Texas didn't have a lot of resources to go back through. So we really worked that as much as we possibly could, managed that PPE as much as we possibly could to make sure that our physicians, our staff, and our patients and all of us were safe.
That's great. So I don't think there's any amount of that you couldn't articulate the reality or the magnitude of the work that was going on behind the scenes in the medical space. All of these moving pieces, all of the pivot. I mean, to find something out and then be shifting. It was difficult for a person who was used to going to the office to move their office inside. It's completely difficult to change an entire infrastructure of how you're getting supplies, moving supplies, getting things that are a shortage, trying to find the deliveries, trying to find all that work. I mean, it just sounds like I know that there was countless hours and energy spent on that. Now that, what we're kind of starting to see is, and again, I'm definitely not here to quote. That's not my job. Anywhere near to say, hey, where are we at in this deal? But, the report is we're going back to work. Things are going to start to ease up in the month of May. Obviously, it's not going to be an overnight thing. They're going to phase in certain aspects of what we're doing. But in the world of medicine and what this looks like, that's a great explanation of all the stuff that's been happening. Now, what is the next 30, 60 days and beyond really look like, both in the medicine side and then for the consumer side? What does it feel like for a person like us trying to get medicine or trying to understand and get supplies and things like that? So just tell us what you guys are working on in the next 60 days.
Well, I will say that, and I'll talk back or look back a little bit on some of the things we've done. You mentioned supplies a little bit. All of us were struggling trying to find supplies. I mean, this is one of those situations. I know a guy who knows a guy. We were reaching out to every single resource we possibly could. And to manage those resources, we had to manage them effectively. We had to manage them tight. It's all about the data. I mean, so you got to know how much you have, how much PPE you have, how much you're using, how much you expect to use, how much is coming in, how much is being turned away. And then you've got to manage the policies that really they touch on all that to make sure that you have enough. And so we really worked hard on that to the point where we have more than 20 sites here at Kelsey Seabold. And so that PPE is scattered throughout the organization. And that PPE, the reason I talk about this more as well is that that's going to become more and more important as we move down into the future. A lot of what we're doing today may become standard as we move into, you know, quite frankly, wave two or wave three of this COVID situation. Or maybe that becomes a regular way of doing business for us even after this. So, you know, we really had to manage that, even to the point where we developed Face Forward teams. So, and what that is, it's a team that was really designated to take care of the patients that were on site so that we limited the number of people who were actually exposed to other people. And so that saves us, or that helped us save a number of PPE, you know, a number of items of PPE. And it's not just masks. You know, a lot of people talk about masks and hand sanitizer, but it's sterile gowns, it's gloves, it's face shields, it's NP swabs, quite frankly, another piece of equipment anyway that we use for testing for COVID. So a lot of these things we really put data elements to and manage those daily to the point, again, where each site would report out every two or three days exactly how much supplies they had on hand. And then we would, you know, monitor any variances. And it also points to how important this port is. You know, to be honest with you, I'm just going to briefly mention that. A lot of our supplies come in through the Port of Houston. And Port of Los Angeles in some cases. In fact, we have our director of purchasing is today on their way up to Intercontinental right now to pick up some supplies that actually came in through Los Angeles. But wow. 400,000 masks, as a matter of fact. So, you know, that PPE is important, but I'm going to touch on virtual medicine a little bit, you know, as well. That is going to become, well, let me give you some numbers. Before this COVID pandemic, about 2% of our business, 1-2% was through virtual health. And that was through e-visits. You know, when I say e, I'm talking about email and video visits. Today, that is 87-88% on any given day. And so when we made that flip, when we flipped that switch in a matter of two or three days, we moved the bulk of our business from in-clinic visits to virtual visits. And let's face it, I mean, you've heard this before. It takes an hour to get to Houston from Houston. And even outside of COVID, this pandemic, there are a lot of benefits to virtual medicine. You know, keeping people off the road, certainly keeping people, keeping social distance, obviously. I mean, that's one of the best things that we can do as well in terms of keeping people safe during this time, is making sure that we are keeping socially, you know, distant from one another. So there are a lot of benefits to the patients, to organizations, you know, where employees can perhaps dial in from their computer and speak to a healthcare provider, as opposed to getting out, driving to a clinic, and then driving back and missing half a day of work. But you know, there's a convenience factor in that as well. And just to tag on to the virtual health line, in addition, is that you know, we're mailing prescriptions to everybody. No sense in having people come pick those up. Again, exposing them to other people in the clinic or other people in the community when you can get your prescriptions mailed to you. And that's just a great benefit.
Wow. That's amazing.
We really, you know, I think this is really going to become a new way of doing business for many organizations. We were lucky to have built our platform years ago, you know, to be honest with you. So we've been doing virtual medicine for a while. But this pandemic has allowed us to leverage that and take care of our patients, where in some cases other smaller organizations just closed the doors. And in fact, you know, we ended up receiving or getting in a lot of new patients to at Kelsey Seabold because their, you know, their providers had shut down for a number of different weeks. So it's going to be a vehicle moving forward, and it's going to be a change for us. I mean, it changes a lot of internal processes for us as well. So, you know, we don't know exactly how that'll look, to be honest with you, but it is going to change the landscape quite a bit.
So for our audience, as we get close to wrapping up, and thank you, I think we hit on some really good kind of behind the scenes, the work. You know, you see the news, you see the media, you're probably in tune with what the world's scratching their head wondering, and I think we touched up on a lot of great things, what you guys are doing to attack telemed and really what the future of virtual medicine and how we're going to head that direction. Are there any kind of closing thoughts if that you'd want our audience to know as we get back out into the world that, you know, that we're hearing from an industry pro and Kelsey Siebold, what are the last few things that you really want to touch up on and make sure, you know, you got a captive audience that we want to share that story?
You know, I will say this is still a very fluid situation. That has been one of the challenges for every organization out there, is that things not only change daily, sometimes they change hourly in terms of recommendations from the CDC or the World Health Organization or the state or local government officials. And so, you know, keeping track of that was very, very important. I think, you know, we're just going to continue to keep our finger on the pulse. We're going to continue to implement and change as we see to the environment. This is, again, a fluid situation. I think we may have wave two and wave three. A bit of good news, I will tell you, in that we're seeing some good numbers, you know, in the last week or so. You know, I will tell you that the hospitals aren't full. You know, the ICUs are not full. You know, there's equipment right now. The emergency rooms are not full. And so we're seeing sort of a plateauing of what's happening in the community. But that could change. That could change tomorrow. I mean, it really could change tomorrow. I will say that you know, the communication, I think, not only within this organization, but outside of this organization to other entities that we work with is so very important. You know, in terms of our own organization, you know, we meet daily through conference calls, multiple conference calls. Our physician leaders are involved. So there are daily email updates. There are daily video conferences. There are daily drive-bys. You know, our executives and our executive physician leaders also, you know, do a lot of coaching and mentoring is not the right word, but there's a lot of conversation, you know, with everybody from the top all the way down to the very bottom of this organization. So I think, you know, we've stayed very much in touch of what's happening throughout the organization and throughout the community, and that's helped us really develop what I would say is a very cohesive response to this pandemic. And we've got a couple of key members I'd just like to point out. You know, Tony Lynn is our CEO, and he's been instrumental in this process. Dr. Jim Hoyle, our medical director, John Lyle, my boss, and also our vice president of operations, Dr. Donnie Aga, our chief of innovation, and Julie Marquis, our director of environmental health and safety. You know, through the, you know, our command center, our executive leadership team, and all that the entire organization is doing, we're making it happen on the front lines, you know, as much as we possibly can. And, you know, we're changing the way the healthcare is and changing the way we do business. I mean, it's a very dynamic situation that we're going through right now. And so we're just, you know, we're glad to be a part of it. And it's humbling to be a very, you know, a part of this response as well. So it really teaches us a lot.
Well, you know, you see and hear it every day. And I think people, you know, because a lot of folks are getting anxious and stuck at their house. But they, you know, the people in the medical industry haven't been, right? They've been working hard, but probably extra and over and above and having to pivot and having to put in excess energy and time into this. And I know that your organization has done a tremendously large amount of that. People inside the Economic Alliance, Port Region, a lot of those are essential jobs and things where resources have been scaled back, but you're asking more to get done. And that's always hard on individuals and their families and the work that they're doing. And this is just a trying time. The one thing that I heard you say that I think is really, really important for all of us to grasp is this is not, there's not a blueprint for this. It's fluid. It's evolving. It's changing. And I think grace and patience and understanding and support of those individuals that are out in the front lines is always, you know, going to be an important thing that people need right now. So
we appreciate it. You know, we've been working, 7 days a week, I'll be honest with you.
Right.
And we're creating sort of a new normal right now, but I think everybody's ready for a day off, to be honest with you, but that day will come. But right now, we're on the front line making it happen.
Well, we appreciate you, and so does the region and Economic Alliance appreciate you as well. You guys are members. We're thankful for that. To our audience, to the folks that are listening and observing, again, we would encourage that you tune into our show. Again, Stuart Kaye from Kelsey Siebold here in Houston. They're members of the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region. You can always tune into our website, our YouTube channel, LinkedIn. You can reach out to me specifically if you have individuals that you think would be good for our audience right now. Stuart, we want to thank you again for your commitment, your service, the duty that's going on in the medical space. Again, we ask you to tune in and check in with us next week or the next show, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Again, Stuart, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Take care.